This is CliffCentral.com.
The Leadership Platform is brought to you by Sibanye, a proudly South African multi-commodity mining company. At Sibanye, we believe leaders are made, not born. We also believe we can create a sustainable legacy by helping to develop tomorrow's leaders today. We are proud of our partnership with the Leadership Platform and will continue to support leaders who are committed to growing our country. Sibanye, we are one. Visit us on sibanyegold.co.za.
Adrian Groenewald with my panel, and this is the Leadership Masterclass. Take time every single week to listen to this Leadership Masterclass, whether it's live or whether it is via podcast. So we are grateful to have you with us, and we hope that you can learn something, take it away, and inspire you to be a better leader this coming week. Visit leadershipplatform.com, two P's in the middle, for all things leadership. All right, Louis Groenewald, Alison Yandu, Edward Kiesvetter, Benny Anderson, and as I understand, Edward is many things, but he's now the president of Da Vinci Institute, and then the vice president is Benny Anderson. So we've got these four gentlemen here. First of all, welcome Edward and welcome Benny.
Hi, nice to be back, Adrian.
You definitely look much more relaxed as opposed to the CEO of a well-known brand where there's an image, I guess, and you've got to, look more formal, yeah? Have someone driving you around, that sort of thing. And now it's kind of a normal lifestyle you're leading, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I guess I don't know how formal I was even as a CEO, but clearly I don't have to wear a tie every day. I certainly don't have to shave every day. So, and I'm trying to look more professorial, you know, so that I can look good in Ben's company.
Now he looks like a corporate guy, clean cut. And Benny Anderson, welcome.
Thank you very much, Adrian. Thanks for the opportunity.
It's good to have you all with us. And I think just a reminder, last week we had a very interesting conversation here. Joey Evans, if you had to listen to that podcast, the guy he's a dirt bike racer, wants to do the Dakar race, but in 2007, he was paralyzed, and he was told he'll never walk again, never mind race, and now in 2016, he qualifies for the Dakar 2017, so in 6 months, January 2nd, I think, it kicks off,
Yeah. And
he's got to do that race. He qualified on a seven-day race in Morocco now, a month ago. The guy still can't feel his legs, really. He's got a heck of a lot of complications, and yet he's going to do this amazing race. So it's such an inspirational story. In fact, we want to take him there, and we want to help him get there and be successful en route. So that's the podcast you can download, and we spoke with him about the law of resistance. You know how the law of resistance, and we've had these conversations before, often is our friend, not our enemy. So those podcasts are available. Today, we look at, in our master lesson, we look at how to not only survive in the up-and-coming change, but to thrive in it. And last week, Edward and Benny, we had a conversation on our transformation platform section, which is 2 to 230. We kind of looked at an author, I forget the author's name. We looked at his predictions of the near and far future, and it was absolutely mind-blowing. It's going all over Facebook at the moment. Goldman, I think, is his surname. And then we looked at the implications on leadership, and that's where the document comes from that I need to forward to you. So we're really into change right now. This platform is about helping leaders hold conversations around how do we wrap our heads around this change and this world that is exponentially changing, as we say. It's change is a constant. And I think something you sent me in an email, Edward, that really stands out for me, but just so that our listeners know, Edward's going to introduce us to our theme today. The lesson predominantly is going to come from him and Benny, and we'll just facilitate and be part of the conversation. But what's the words that you said to me? Does the past hold any precedent for the future? I mean, we used to do that, didn't we? That's what history is about, isn't it? To learn from history and then move forward in life. And these days you say, gee whiz, can you actually do that? Because the world is so dramatically different. All right, so that's it. It's our master lesson. Over to you, Edward. Give us a bit of context, a bit of background, and then we'll go over to Benny, and he'll bring a specific, almost a framework of leadership to us, and we'll just have a nice conversation around it.
Yes, thanks, Adrian. So maybe to start off is to contrast linear thinking with non-linear thinking.
Okay.
So linear thinking is a world where change is incremental, small steps, where typically the future is a projection or at least a function of the past, which means you can extrapolate certain things, and you can be more accurate about what the future looks like. And thirdly, where experience and knowledge are key leadership currencies. And many leaders today rely on their success and their leadership behavior because of their past experience and their accumulated knowledge. So that's kind of the world of linear thinking.
Okay.
In the world of non-linear thinking, change is exponential. Now, let me pause there for a moment. Exponential change has to be understood to really understand its impact, because the reason why we are disrupted in a world where we often are in a comfort zone is you don't see it until it's too late. So disruptive change, exponential change simply means it doubles every period. Now, when the change is small, when you're talking about 0.001, doubling that is 0.002. And it's below the radar. You don't see it. It's 0.1, it's 0.2, it's 0.4, you know, it's 0.8, and you still don't see it. And then it goes 1.6.
Bang.
Yeah. And then you've crossed the 1. Now, this is how exponential change goes. 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64, 128, 256, 512, 1024, 2096. And before you know it, you have gone from something which, even though it doubled, is very small, to something which is off scale. That's the exponential. And so very of us, we don't see the Uber coming, because the small changes are so small until it's too late.
Yeah.
You don't see Airbnb coming until it's too late. And that's why traditional companies who have commandeered the space of transport or of accommodation for many, many years no longer can rely on experience for that. And so that's the important difference. The second is the future is discontinuous with the past.
Let me just make sure. We're now in non-linear space,
thinking,
aren't we?
So the first is change is exponential as opposed to incremental. Secondly, in linear thinking, change is often a reflection, a prediction, or an extrapolation of the past. In non-linear thinking, it's a discontinuity. There is no, the past is not a predictor of the future. And then thirdly, wisdom, courage, and humility are the new leadership currencies, as opposed to experience and knowledge. And so the ball game has changed. And if you think I'm here because I've earned it, that's just the point in time where you will be disrupted. Let me pause there for a moment and engage.
All right. So let's get Benny, Louis, and Alice on board here. I mean, we talk of it so easily. We say a new app has arrived, and that new app has the ability to create exponential change. It's, to us, it's like just par for the course, isn't it? That's what we're used to these days. But we don't realize that app changes banking forever, or Bitcoin changes banking, or this changes that. Okay, gentlemen, jump in. I mean, that's a fascinating foundation block on which we can build. We're in the non-linear space as a society, and we will get just now to how are we training our leaders to be able to deal with that. It's just it looks like we're still training leaders along the linear path, aren't we? In our business schools, often in our leadership programs, in our educational training, it's very, very linear in many respects. Certainly, school is very linear, definitely. I've no doubt about that. A university may be different, I don't know, but I think we're still stuck. Benny?
I don't think we in the non-linear space in any way yet.
Not yet.
We're not in the in the non-linear space. I think it's still a pipe dream, and I think people can almost discuss it in very, you know, interesting debates and, you know, have discussions around it. But I see very little of the non-linear engagements at the workplace and on the floor of the shop. It's just not happening, because in a way...
But does that mean maybe we're in non-linear space, but people are not functioning there? It's denial still.
Well, I
or maybe certain industries are non-linear and others not yet. Do you know what I mean?
So, I think you will be in the non-linear space, maybe in your head, but that doesn't mean you are in the non-linear space. It's like people are dreaming about being in heaven, but they're actually not in heaven. So I think it's a perceptual thing. So maybe the mind have shared these ideas, but there's been non-linear discussions long time ago. To be quite honest with you, the ideas of a Karl Marx was very non-linear. the humanitarian underpinnings of Karl Marx's idea that we should look at how we operate in the workplace is a very non-linear idea. But this is, I mean, we a few decades away from that, and still we are not operating in that space. We're still struggling to grapple with the non-linear ideas that were positioned. If you look at what Ricardo positioned, that was also non-linear. So there's been ideas around non-linear thinking for a long time. But we are indeed, as Edward refers to it, still trapped in a linear mindset. We can't free ourselves, seemingly, from where we come from. And we almost say, I can only be if I understand where I come from. Now, I want to put an idea in here. If you think of what the Incas did, or still doing, and we may, as a modern society, not necessarily appreciate what the Incas have done, but the Incas have got this notion of time as a continuous engagement, where you should elevate your mind to a level where you could see tomorrow rolling in and yesterday rolling out at the same time. So if we can embrace linearity and non-linearity as a continuous concept, then I think we may move a bit forward. But we almost want to go either or. We either say, I'm going to the past, or I'm going to the future. In my mind, I think the true managerial leader will embrace both the past and the present in the current, or the past and the future in the present. And there will be a different showing up of who we are if we can straddle those two realities.
See, where we are and where we should be, no, or rather where our mind space is and where the world is almost, it's just going there, is maybe another thing. For me, you know, when things happen in the now, how can we think we're not non-linear?
News
is in the now. Things happen in the now. It's reported in the now. Social media is in the now.
But it's the now in terms of the, if you think of the Incas, the now there means I can only be true in the now if I appreciate the continuity between yesterday and the future.
Sure. Okay. All right, Alice, and then Edward, you want to jump in?
Yeah, I tend to agree with Ben on this particular issue that we're not there yet. You know, it's like a little kid, you know, driving to...
Is our thinking not there yet, or is the world not there yet?
And some of us are saying, are we there yet? And I think that's the kind of conversation that's unfolding here.
Yeah.
I think you're dealing with two things here in terms of, you know, tension. There's tension between what is in our mind and tension in terms of where the environment is. You know, we've spoken before about, you know, co-evolution, where our minds have to evolve commensurate with the environment. So the environment, I think, is going in a different direction, and that's where this exponential change is emerging because of what is around us, you know, especially technology.
Yeah.
Hence this exponential change. But our mindset, you know, our psychology, we could call it psychosis, is still trapped, you know, elsewhere. And that's where you have to bring the you know, close that gap.
Yeah.
And that's going to take time.
Okay, yeah. Edward?
I think it's important to understand this is not an either or. You know, when we came up with quantum physics, it didn't negate or disqualify all our thinking around Newtonian physics.
Okay.
So, but it coexists. But our insight into quantum physics has actually broadened our understanding of how the world works. And Ben is right. Nonlinear and linear thinking coexist. I do think, however, there is something that is going to accelerate the non-linearity of the world in which we live, and therefore the rate of change will go from being incremental to being exponential.
Internet of Things, for example.
Well, and that's technology. So, you know, there's a guy called Moore who spoke about the Moore's Law that says, you know, every 18 to 24 months, the price performance of technology doubles, which means that, you know, the size is smaller of a little chip, the price is half, and the performance is double. And I think we're into the field of nanotechnology, and increasingly technology is what is accelerating change. And we spoke about the app early on. So I think that is different between when the Incas lived and when we live today. And it is unpredictable, both in terms of the nature of that change and also of the rate of that change. But I think we will always have linear and non-linear coexisting.
Okay, makes sense, Louis.
And the other thing, Adrian, that's emerging now is that you're hearing a lot of people saying we're in a cognitive era. You know, companies like your IBMs, you know, have come up with things like the Watsons. So over time, it's going to be very important in terms of how our minds align with the cognitive capacity of the machines around us because of what we are able to do in terms of deploying the technology.
Okay, good point. Louis, the old man in our midst, yeah, I mean, you've lived to see all this and it's exponentially changing. Your views?
I think most people think they are nonlinear thinkers. And this is part of the challenge because once you label yourself, then you are committed to that label. In my case, I've had a passion for inspirationally authentic ideas, ideas that drill down to the essence of things. And all my writings, as you know, Arden, have been in that vent. I don't feel restive until I feel I understand a core of it, which of course is a never-ending process. So I can imagine that kind of thinking is going to be more and more important in the future.
Okay, Edward, let's take it to the next level, and then we'll get to the framework that Ben has prepared for us.
And then maybe just to say, from my experience, the leadership traits that is required in a nonlinear world is also very different to the leadership traits that was very successful in a linear world. Some of them is, you know, making friends with chaos and uncertainty. You know, you can't come and just expect everything to be, you know, you've done the plan, you execute the plan, and you'll achieve what you've planned. Planning becomes more dynamic. Every day you have to reassess. And so being more comfortable with certainty and chaos is a trait of a leader who will be successful. The second is to never claim to know everything, to be the standard of truth, but to be a truth seeker, and always have healthy skepticism. Because just when you think you know it all, just when you think you've mastered a particular subject or topic, then everything changes. And so having healthy skepticism and always seeking for an evolving truth is important. Thirdly, is be prepared to write the script, to write the rules. As I said, there is no precedent, and therefore, the thing about the exponential change is very often, you know, GE said, if we're not number one or number two in an industry, we get out. Today, you almost have to be number one. There is no number two. So who is the number two for Google? Who is the number two for Amazon.com? And so today, you know, it's just that scary thought that if you are not number one, you have a high probability of not being at all.
It's a bit like BlackBerry. They were number one, and where are they now?
Exactly.
I guess they're there, but they're actually not there.
They're not there.
Nokia.
So being prepared to write your own script, write your own rules is important. Then something very important is being able to communicate with clarity. Now, this sounds like almost a counterintuitive, that you're living in chaos, you're living in uncertainty, but at any point in time, you have to communicate with clarity. Now, clarity does not mean you fix and set for the next 10 years, but it means at any point in time, you are clear about your intent. You are clear about what you're trying to achieve and how you're going to achieve, but you keep the open mind to ensure it. So clarity is an important concept, and clarity rather than confidence is how leaders take people with them, particularly in a time of high change. And then the last point, I think, is something I draw on from Collins, that says level five leadership is a leadership, and I think this is very, very typical of nonlinear leaders, is to lead with fearless resolve, but balance that in the context of genuine humility, which means you are never, ever the expert. You're always looking around for people who know more, who can bring more. And I think those are some of the emerging traits that is required in a non-linear world.
Powerful. There were four or five. How many did you have?
Five.
There? Five. Very five, powerful principles. Now, before we go to that, Benny, you've got a framework of leadership thinking in this world we're describing here. That incorporates linear and non-linear. Just introduce that to us.
Before we get to the frame, I almost want to pose a question to myself and maybe to the listeners. Is why are we having the discussion on leadership? So are we having a discussion because we want to create a frame which people can then be clear on and in a way follow it? Or are we talking about leadership as a recognition that some people, some individuals or groups of individuals will merely take the lead, irrespective of whether people follow them or understand it or not? So I would like us to just touch on this later also. What is the reason for asking the question?
Mm. Now, okay. So if anyone wants to jump in, do that. It's a powerful one because this is what we do every week. We have leadership conversations. And for me, it's about creating leadership fit mind, you know, so that you can always wrap your head. It's a never-ending change. And if you don't if you don't get your mind in leadership thinking space before you do technical space or managerial space, you're in trouble. When people's first response is a managerial one or a technical one, I think they're in trouble in today's world, because everything Edward just mentioned, those five qualities, it's not a managerial, there's elements of it, but it's a strong leadership component. But very good question. So let's see if we can get there.
I think it's a very fundamental question, because I just think when I was in high school, you know, high primary, not at any point did we discuss leadership. Yet I think leadership in its broadest sense encompasses yourself as an individual, because there's leading that you yourself have to do in terms of moving yourself from A to B. Mm. Whether you're part of a family, a part of a broader society, or whether you find yourself on a factory shop. Yet, as you rightfully point out, we often talk about or assume leadership to be about the managerial aspect of things, and it's not necessarily the case. Mm. So I would say perhaps what we are trying to inculcate here is a frame of thinking that says, how do we as individuals and as a society, as organizations, lead where we are?
Mm.
So I would like to respond to that.
Mm. Of course you do.
I think we struggle to define leadership. And in my own mind, I almost want to say I gave up on it. So I decided, well, how do I deal with the reality on leadership? And hence the reason why in my mind, I'm aligned to the construct of a managerial leader. And the reason being that I sense that we are not successful over a long period of time to disconnect leaders from, or to get leaders to be in the leadership space, almost what Edward refers to and the dimensions of it. So I'm almost going for a second option, a second best, and say, I can make peace with the idea that we can talk about managerial leadership, because we are so confined to structure and that reality and all the dimensions of structure and hierarchy, that it seems to me that in the world of work, I can't talk about a leader. I have to talk about a managerial leader, because we have inherently woven into the profile of the leader management constructs.
And maybe just the importance of that is we often think of leadership versus management, and we define it differently. I think the managerial leadership notion, which is one of the founding principles of the Da Vinci Technology Institute of Technology, brings it together and says, you know, there's no benefit in being super, super strategic and influential if you can't actually do anything. And just to do something but not be able to synthesize that into the context of leadership is also just kind of following a particular set of rules which one would expect a manager to do. So I think that's really the background. The managerial leadership brings the two notions together and doesn't try to define it separately, but rather see it as a continuum.
Okay, Edward and Benny, we've got two things, and maybe we've crossed over some of these. We've got this framework that I want you to touch on, and time is a bit of a limit. Then, Edward, kind of what I thought we'd end with is how leaders may lead in a more innovative manner, understanding the impact of technology. So where are we going to prioritize? Can we bring the two together?
I think let's talk about the frame.
Benny, let's go to the framework.
So if we look at the frame that we work on managerial leadership, is we acknowledge the reality, the operational reality of running a business, a workplace, organizing things and planning, etc. So the first construct there is the idea of what is known. We all have a great tendency to categorize things. And the reason why we categorize things is because we make the assumption that I'm in control and that I do know. Whether I know partially doesn't matter. I believe I know. And because of the knowing, we acknowledge that. That's something that we see in people across the board. The second construct is the idea of engaging with what is knowable. So thereby, I step a little bit back, I pull the lens a little bit back and say, I won't categorize, but I will analyze what is going on around me, and therefore I will be able to understand the knowable reality. Now, even if you play with the known and the knowable reality, we believe that you are still only playing with what we define as the world of order. You're saying by doing that, that you're able to take charge of reality, which I think is not necessarily true. But it's a reality.
Yeah, it might be an arrogant statement, you know, thinking that I...
But people live like that. I hear CEOs saying, well, these are the three solutions to this problem. Well, good luck for you. Good luck. So that's the one side of the framework. It's dealing with the world as if it's a place that is ordered, and I can categorize and analyze, and therefore I'm in charge.
Okay.
But if you move over to what we will define as the world of the unorder, where you appreciate that you don't know, that you withhold yourself from categorizing or analyzing, and you simply probe by asking questions. So you admit and you like the idea of not being in control, and you ask a question. And by probing and asking questions over time, and sometimes a short period of time, you will see the emergence of a new reality, of a new understanding.
Okay.
And you can go to the fourth dimension, that's the chaotic dimension, where you really have no intent of giving any direction. In the chaotic space, you've got no tendency of giving direction or taking it.
Is that the disorder?
No, we're not there.
Not there yet.
In the chaotic space, you just put energy into the system. That's all that you do, and you watch where it goes. You follow the direction.
So I mean, a practical way is putting an idea.
Well, to give you an idea.
That's what you explained to me, and we'll talk about it maybe in the second half. Yeah. Those guys you called in and said, right, I want you to change something. That's the thought. We'll come back to that in the second half with Edward.
But if you look at the idea of business lounges, they started because companies needed a third stream of income. And a group of people in a company, an airline company, pitched up to work the next morning. They got onto the departure and the arrivals hall. They dressed up as a camera crew. And they started asking people coming out of the airplane certain questions. And they realized that the people who sit in the business class liked to be talked to. That's how business lounges started. It wasn't an R&D project in the known reality or in the knowable reality. It was a chaotic project. Today, we still run business lounges.
With no planned outcome.
No plan. No direction. Just energy.
When we spoke last week, you raised a very real and current challenge. You know, we've just had the... US and the UK and Australia following with travel warnings to people.
Yeah.
And what the response was of the leaders, the political leaders, was kind of in the known, not even in the knowable world. And maybe, Ben, you want to elaborate because you raised the example.
Yeah, I want to make an example. So here's a practical thing. There's a scare to the country, to many other countries to start with. But if you take the known perspective, you immediately take it, well, I'm now out of control, so I have to categorize this thing. I must now manage this thing.
Labels.
I must label it. So what do? We say, we categorize it. Our perception is there's nothing big happening here. So it's just people making us scared about something, and it's no reliable respondent. So let's just forget about it. Now, what will happen if a bomb does go off in the Mall of Africa? Well, that will then be chaos, but that's a different chaos. So what if we took the approach and said, well, let's just see, we could categorize it. So our view is this is not serious. Let's go into the systemic view, and we look at the knowable, and we say, oh, it's also happening in Australia. They also had it for Morocco. They have it for the US themselves. So how are they dealing with it? Oh, so this is the pattern that we're seeing. And maybe go to the complex and say, let's probe. Let's ask some questions and look at the environment. We will get a flood of ideas around what could be done on this matter. And then we would have a total different response.
Okay, good example.
Now, if you don't do this continuous balancing act between the ordered and the unordered reality, you will ultimately get into disorder.
And I think the important thing is you want to sound as the expert.
Yes, you want to be sound in control.
So what the minister is saying is there is no threat. How can America even think that? It's a demonstration that I know what's happening, I'm on control, and I'm telling you nothing will happen. Now, there's no basis for that statement.
Yeah, it's just...
What the minister could say is...
It's PR spin.
We have heard. Let's try and understand why this is raised. Let's dig a little bit deeper. Let's look a bit wider. Okay. And let's also accept that even when we've done all of that, we may not know everything.
Let's keep asking the questions.
Exactly.
It comes to your five attributes, the humility, for example.
Yeah.
Okay, our time is up, but I'm stretching it because it's such a fascinating conversation. Now, Louis, you want to come in here? Even the earlier question about why we're having this conversation, Benny, that's still stuck in my mind. Although I'm with you. Louis, let's kind of wrap up comments around this, and then we can continue in the next section.
I must say, throughout my adult life, I've been bothered with these questions. What is leadership, for instance? And we've defined it one way to try and cut a lot of the labels around. And we say leadership is that part of us that help move situations in a positive direction. Now, in other words, it's a value-based approach. And everything said today makes a great deal of sense. Mm. Even redefining, you speak about confidence, but you say confidence should be clarity. Now, that, to my mind, becomes a kind of confidence. In other words, it's clarity in the process. So I believe confidence is trust in processes that work, but not in saying you know all the answers, because that builds distrust a great deal in our country. Exactly what you explained now.
Okay, Alice?
Yeah, look, all these points that have been made, especially the point about what are we looking to arrive at in the context of leadership, makes me wonder now whether should we start thinking about how much of a blind spot do we have with regards to our perception and our understanding of leadership in the context of a non-linear world.
Mm.
Because it's tempting to, you know, to sort of try and define leadership as we've known it, yet no one or people are trying to sort of build the framework that Ben is talking about to come with, you know, a new definition of leadership in a non-linear world. So it makes me think as to, you know, what sort of opportunities do institutions like the Davis Institute have to go beyond the realm of what you said earlier, training leaders, okay, versus conditioning leaders, which I think is the fundamental dichotomy that we need to deal with if we are to arrive at the...
But you know what, gentlemen, just the conversation we're having today, how many corporates have this conversation in their business with their management teams? Just to stretch the thinking a bit and to wobble them, you know, and to have them think different about things.
Sadly not. I mean, it's often just the quarterly results.
Correct, you know? And the performance measures.
And it's a rear view. It's, you know, the years ended, what was the results, what went wrong, rather than, you know, just taking a step back and saying, it's what are we trying to achieve and understand the context rather than just this narrow window of opportunity, or not narrow window of performance that we're trying to seek better and doing it, you know, past the fact anyway.
Final comments, Benny, on this. I know we must have more conversations, and then Edward, final comment, then we'll take a 30-second break and come back.
I almost want to say I think we need to be more in line with reality, which I think is very much an anarchist experience. World does not work in straight lines. But yet we constantly want to translate it into straight lines. So as much as we create this framework, I think we must be aware that there's a voice in every person. And what are we doing to facilitate the awareness of that voice? Because then I think we will talk less about leadership.
Mm. Okay, I'll go and listen to the podcast on this pod conversation. Edward, we're going into a conversation with you now. So I think let's end it here. And then we'll go straight into your 20, 25 minutes just to wrap up some of this, but also look at your life and what you've learned in the reality of running probably a very linear type organization, bunch of actuaries at Alexander Forbes. So 30 seconds, we'll be back with Edward Kisveta, the former CEO of Alexander Forbes and now president and very involved with Da Vinci Institute and many other projects, in fact. Stay with us.
This is CliffCentral.com.